Welcome to another episode of the Black Menaces Podcast. I'm your host, Nate. I'm here with my amazing co-host,
Rachel Weaver. Happy to be back with you guys this week.
Absolutely. And we have an incredible guest on the podcast that we're just going to jump right into and start talking about. Ms. Meredith, say hello.
Hello. So excited to be here.
Perfect. Yeah. So tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're from and who you are, what you're doing in Salt Lake, all that good stuff.
Yes. Should I be talking to this camera, by the way?
Oh, it's
just, or does it matter?
Us. Okay, look at us. Go ahead. Cool, yeah. You can look at whoever you are.
I am from good old Provo, Utah. So, yeah.
Oh my gosh. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So I officially was like born in North Carolina, but I grew up in Provo, Utah.
Okay.
So grew up in Provo, Utah, went to school there, you know, my whole childhood there, and then went on a mission to Ukraine and came back, went to BYU, and then made my way up to Salt Lake City, and I'm here. I'm not full-time drag queen, but I'm a pretty much full-time drag queen and like to consider myself also like a social activist, a newly out trans woman. And Woo-hoo. So,
yay.
Yeah, really excited to be here. It's taken a lot to get here, though. Coming from the good old Provo, Utah.
Right.
Yeah.
And we want to get into that, like, absolutely, what your journey has been like, just because, I mean, everybody's story is so unique, but growing up in Provo, growing up Mormon, and, you know, eventually coming out as trans, like, I can't even imagine that journey, what that was been like.
Yes.
And so I want to first start off by asking, how, like, was it growing up? Like, did you come from a family that, you know, everybody was LDS? Was it, you know, pioneer ancestry? I'm just curious, like, what it was like in terms of, like, your family context growing up.
Yeah, very, very LDS family. I have 8 siblings.
Oh, wow.
So 6 sisters and 2 brothers.
Oh, my
and I've
gosh.
Got, like, 20-something nieces and nephews. So
oh,
big
gosh.
Old Mormon family. Very, very, very much, like, religious growing up.
Mm-hmm.
I have very generational, like, LDS. My previous middle name actually was Taft, as after Ezra Taft Benson.
Oh my gosh.
Good old Taft.
My great uncle. So I definitely come from a family.
Great uncle.
Yeah.
So you know what I know about Ezra Taft Benson?
Probably not a lot of good things.
No, all the bad things. Everything I know about that guy.
Yeah, me too. Oh, me too. Wow. So trust the name. When the name change came, that was not included.
Right. You're like, this is not first thing to go.
So yeah, very, very LDS family. It was definitely growing up in Provo. I didn't come out, I guess, I came out as gay 3 years ago while I was at BYU. So I lived a very, like, straight, suppressed life where I was very much just trying to fit in the box. I'm the younger end of my family. I have 2 little sisters. And so it was very much just like trying to blend in and not be a distraction. I kind of disguised that through being like the golden child in church. I was always in like church leadership programs and I was like in student government, seminary, youth council, like AP on my mission for so long. So I definitely like suppressed everything and tried to put on that mask through like the church facade. And I think I did it so much to the point where I was like believing it. So very much like was on this very like Mormon trajectory.
I feel that that's where I was too.
Yeah.
Like very much like I did all the leadership things and, you know, went on my mission and tried to do everything like by the book pretty much, you know.
Yes.
But then it gets to a point where you're like, this is not serving me anymore.
Exactly. Right? Exactly. Yeah.
But like, I guess tell us a little bit more about like what it was like being, you know, growing up in Provo, coming into your queer identity. I know that you said you came out as gay about 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But like, you know, what was it like maybe when you were younger? Did you realize that that you had like a different identity at that time? And like, what was it like kind of dealing with that on the inside?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely realized from a very young age that I was queer, trans, you know, not not the usual that I saw around me. Mm-hmm. I don't think I had words to put to it because I was in a very straight cis environment with not a lot of diversity. And so I didn't have words to put to it, but I did learn, you know, on the flip side from a very young age that like I was not going to be safe to be that version of myself. You know, the times that I expressed my femininity as a child and kind of leaned into that more, I, you know, immediately kind of clicked like, oh, this is not going to like be okay for people around me. Mm-hmm. And so like socially in my family,
people reacted?
Yeah, the way people reacted. And I think it was also the way that like things were said of like, don't do this, or that's too girly, or that's too femme, or like, that's too gay, or like, you know, things like that. And I think too, having like moments where I realized in my family, like, oh, this is how, I know this is how they feel about people like this, or hearing them talk about queer people, you know,
right.
Seeing queer representation on TV. I remember when I was a kid, there was like one show and it showed like a queer scene and my family's all like, oh, that's so disgusting. That's like vile, you know, things like that. And, you know, so it taught me from a very young age, like, oh, this is not going to be the way that I can express myself. But I still found ways to do it. I grew up doing ballroom dance and I grew up doing theater and I sewing and I was constantly doing my sister's hair. And so it was kind of this like flip side, right? Where on one side, my parents were gracious enough to let me be in these programs that helped me feel myself. Mm. But on the other side, it was kind of like this, like, yeah, but you're not like too into it, you know, or like, don't be too gay. It was this weird thing. So kind of in this middle ground of like, okay, if I'm just enough in the middle, no one will be able to like see through this facade. And that's where I played into the church card, right? Everything was queerly, like clearly pointing to the fact that I was queer, but people were always like, oh, but you're like so in the church, there's no way that like, you know, but everybody knew. We all knew.
I'm curious, as you were talking, I thought about this. I know how big gender is in the church and like gender roles and gender is eternal and all that bullshit, you know?
Yes.
And so I'm curious what that was like for you processing growing up and realizing, right, things might not feel the way you're not feeling like you identify with that. And so I was curious what that was like, if that is what you felt like, if that played on anything at all, especially like going on your mission.
Yeah.
I know that that's a very heavily gendered experience. And so just anything you want to share about that.
So the interesting thing about it is since I realized from such a young age that I wouldn't be safe to like be myself, I don't even think I let myself mentally go there. I think I suppressed it so deeply to the point where I made myself believe that it wasn't the case.
Right.
And now in my adulthood, I'm starting to piece together all these things of like, oh yeah, like that, I never identified with that, or like, oh, but I played the part. It was almost like playing a role and I believed so deeply in the role.
Yeah.
But I remember a few key moments that I'm really kind of clicking now, especially with my sisters. So I have six sisters, as I mentioned, and we just always were dancing. I was always doing hair, makeup with them. And those were like my memories where I was like, this is where I felt me, you know, I'm with the girls, I'm with my girls. And in my mind, that's just what clicked for me. And I remember a few moments where I was forced to go on like a trip with my brothers or scouting, going to Boy Scouts where I just hated it. And it was awful. I mean, imagine me.
I was going to say, personally, I loved it. But I can see the other side of that.
My dad trying to teach me basketball, things like that, where it's just like, this isn't clicking. And obviously, those are like stereotypical things. But I 100%. Think to the core, I never identified with manhood. And I knew from a young age, this is not me. And that womanhood was more like where I identified. But I never let myself mentally, internally feel it all the way.
Interesting. I love that. And I wanted to ask that question just because I feel like a lot of the narrative around like around the queer community and around trans people is that it's like this illness that's like sweeping the nation, or like it's this thing that you can catch, right?
Yes.
But I've yet to meet a queer person who like wasn't aware that they were different from a very early age, right? Yes. Like we, like everybody that we've interviewed on this podcast so far, Rachel, has been like, oh, I knew from the time I was like 8, mm-hmm. 9, like when I was 11, 12. Like they always know at a very early Same. Age.
Yeah.
And maybe even younger than that, but like yeah. you maybe can't put it into words or into right. thought and feeling, right? So I just love to punch that point home that like
yes.
to this day, like to this point, we've done, this is the 74th episode, and yes. like, all of the people that we've interviewed from all the different backgrounds, different, you know, identities, no one has ever said, this is something that I just like, that just occurred to me, you know, as yeah. an adult, this is something that I've known about, you know, in my life for a yes. long time. And I think that's something that's so important to emphasize when yes. people are trying to teach that it's this, that it's this evil thing. That's like a contagion. Yes. Right. You
know? Right. It makes me laugh a little bit because I mean, I think I'm a perfect example of this. I grew up in Provo, Utah, and the environment, like by, if we're talking about like media or like pride flags or books, like by that, I should have turned out to be straight,
right.
like a straight cis male, like, right. you know, and 100%. So I still am here though. And that's the point where I'm just like, it's so funny. I'm like, this is not the thing that's just catching on. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And in a lot of cases, it's not like the preferred, like I would not choose to be here. This is social suicide.
No, 100%. I remember, this is just really random, the first time that I really registered in my head, like somebody being gay, lesbian, trans, queer, anything, was in seventh grade. And my teacher, she, you know, Chicago, growing up with the liberals, you know. And so she was like, she was just talking about it one time, going off about stuff. And she was like, I want you all to think about, like really deeply think about, why would someone choose to do something that would ostracize them from their friends, from their family,
yes.
things that would make them feel alienated from
yes.
their communities they grew up in. And I remember I was like 12 years old. And when my teacher said that, that's when it literally like clicked for me.
Yeah.
Like, and ever since then, I was like, I've always like that made so much sense to me. And it just mm-hmm. helped me to be an ally to the community and to always, like, I never subscribed to any of the things that I heard in church or yeah. even like the Black community has a lot of homophobia in it, especially the older generation. Yeah, I'm talking to y'all if you're listening. they have things they need to work on. And so like those things, it's just interesting how they never, ever since I heard that, it just changed my whole perspective at such a young age. And that just goes to show that yeah. when we have accepting communities, when we yeah. have support systems that encourage, you know, yes. if you were curious at yes. a young age, a child who's feeling those things, they have people that are going to encourage them to explore yes. it and figure those things out for themselves in the timeline that works for them.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I love that.
Absolutely. So let's talk about your time at BYU.
Yes.
So you know, you grew up in Provo, and then I'm assuming that kind of the expectation was that you would go to BYU.
Yes.
And what was it like when you finally got there? And I guess what was your experience like? I guess starting from freshman year, and then by yes. the time you graduated, how did it change?
Very different, right? I was like, it was very much this thing of like, I see everybody, you go on a mission, you come home, mm-hmm. you get married, you go to BYU, you know, the whole pipeline. They got it on that sales pipeline, pumping them out.
No,
somebody forgot to twist the valve a couple times and yeah. then you pop out, right?
Yeah. Which, so I actually ended up at BYU specifically through ballroom dance, because I grew up doing ballroom dance yeah. through the BYU youth ballroom programs. Okay. And they had a like opportunity where you could get a scholarship. I ended up getting the scholarship to BYU, which BYU, you know, they have the best ballroom team in the world.
Yeah.
They are like world champions.
I know yeah. they're ranked really well. Like yeah, that's what I heard. Because it's really big
one.
In Utah.
It's huge. Yeah. Performing arts is huge. And that was like, I guess, kind of fortunate for me is like, oh, people do ballroom in Utah, Derek Huff, Julian Huff, right? Like you see these people. So I kind of hid under the guise of it.
Mm.
But yeah, it's a huge thing. Which, fun fact, it actually stems a lot from like the pioneers and Brigham Young. Brigham Young's son was a drag queen. Yeah.
I didn't know this.
I didn't know until someone commented on my TikTok.
Oh my
They're
gosh.
Like, Brigham Young's son was a drag queen. I was like, shut up.
I need to do more research.
I know.
Wait.
Crazy. So it stems a lot from that. Anyways, there's a little rabbit hole. But coming to BYU, I was really on the like performing side of it. So I knew I was going before my mission, went on my mission, and I actually had a really, I guess this isn't getting to BYU yet, but I actually had a really good experience on my mission, fortunately. Okay. I went to Ukraine. It was a lot of volunteer-based work.
Oh, that's awesome.
I due to like the laws, we did just lots of like teaching English, game nights, sports nights, making lots of friends. I didn't really dress up. I didn't ever like proselytize. I mean, that's obviously there was like the church aspect, but I was super fortunate in the fact that like I didn't have to have a ton of trauma from that experience.
100%.
I mean, learning Russian and being in a country for 2 years at the age of 18 is a pretty, it's still a traumatic thing.
But... Right. But in the grand scheme of what other people have to go through in terms
I definitely could have had it worse.
Especially how indoctrinating a mission can be.
Yes.
When you're always teaching it to other people. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes, totally. Yeah, I mean, totally.
And this is kind of like a side question, but I was just wondering, so when you saw everything that was happening in Ukraine a couple of years ago and like what's been going on, since you have a personal connection to the actual country, what was that like for you, just really briefly?
Super hard, honestly. So because I had had so much volunteer work, it was so much friends. I made so many friends on my mission, and I still am in contact with pretty much all of them.
Right.
A lot of younger adults.
Yeah.
One of them, like, you know, he came out as gay, and he is in this position where we've become really close to each other, and he's a huge fan of drag, and so we really connect on that. And other ones, I mean, the ones that I baptized all left the church, and we've been able to talk about that together. So really positive experience. And so it just like crushed me when I heard it. It was so crazy to have such proximity with it, you know. Right, I look at everything right now happening in Gaza and around the world, where it's like, without that like proximity, I think it's hard for people to like grasp it and to grasp what's really happening. So having that, I spent like waking hours just like so pitted in my stomach, knowing, talking with them, and they're like, we're going to this bomb shelter and we're going here, and like, you know, having that direct tie, it just was shattering. I tried to put together a lot of fundraisers with some of my friends, and you know, still I'm trying to, you know, step in where I can, but it's also like, it's a huge situation that, you know, you can't just control as one person.
Right.
But.
Totally. Yeah. Oh yeah. But back to your BYU and what that was like in the journey. Cause I love asking people this as well, just cause thinking about being in college is such a discovery phase.
Yes.
And we were in like this, like, we couldn't really discover ourselves fully. Cause it was like, we had like, someone was like holding our necks down. You know what I mean? Yes. So we really couldn't fully even spread those wings to be a young, like a 20-year-old to be dumb. You know what I mean? Like, and we couldn't even really figure that stuff out. And so,
Coming into it, I mean, that's exactly what I was. I was like, I am going to get married and I'm going to have a career, blah, 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 you know, and just went so hit the ground running with all of that. And I mean, I was like saying to my friends, like, I'm going to be married to a woman in the temple within 6 months of coming home.
Oh,
like,
you were that person.
I was that person. I was that person.
That's okay. We all had our things. Yeah. I had my, look, I told my friend one time how I would never not wear my garments. I'm like, once I make a commitment, that's just not hard for me. But so we've all had our things. Don't worry.
We've all been there. No, it's real. So I was very much in that mindset. And I remember trying so hard, right? Like, going on dates with girls and like going to the temple every week. And I remember I would leave every date and it was just like, that was really fun. But I just feel like we're going to be best friends. Mm. And all my friends were like, something's going on. Anyway.
I love your friends.
The friends, they were real. They were real.
Yeah, that's real.
To the friends watching, thank you. We see you. We hear you. Anyways, I obviously did have the hard time of it. But again, since I was playing so into this like facade, I was, you know, I was that one that was like kind of scrutinizing others. Like, you need to be more churchy and stop listening to songs that are swearing in it. Right.
Right.
And so
been there.
I was there and I had the ballroom piece and that kind of saved me. And I remember I had my first diversion, equity and inclusion class, and it woke my eyes up to so much because I remember them talking about so many things. And I remember being like, oh my goodness, so many of these things apply to me. And it kind of was like making things start to wake up a little bit. And I was like, shit, like, I don't know what to do with this. And that was around the same time that COVID happened.
Okay.
And I guess I should say this before, kind of around this time, I'm trying to think where it was. I you know, was so in this like blurry spot of realizing this. And I remember as a youth, I realized growing up, like praying to God, like, please take this gay, queer, disgusting thing away from me. Like, mm-hmm. I don't want this anymore. And realized it. And I just kind of shoved it. I was kept coming back up. And so I was like, you know, I really feel like we got to do whatever we can. And I ended up like kind of getting into this thing, which ended up being conversion therapy, which was pretty crazy. Oh my gosh, wow. Yeah. And it definitely messed me up a bit.
Briefly, I hate to interrupt, but no, if you please. Could just kind of like briefly describe what conversion therapy is.
Yes. So conversion therapy is like, I mean, the definition is like any sort of program or thing that is like trying to convince an LGBTQ plus person that they are not what their identity is. Some people have gone far to measure, like far measures of like shock therapy. It's like trying to shock the gay away, essentially, or like they did that a lot, you know, back early days of BYU and then the church, they did that. Or it can be through just like straight up talking therapy, or it can be through like more holistic, which mine was kind of more like holistic church religion intertwined, basically convincing someone that like they're not who they say they are. For me, it ended up being a lot of like, you've got different gendered spirits in your body. You have gay spirits, and we need to exercise them out, kind of a thing.
Wow.
Yeah. Demons, yeah. And, you know, kind of let's get rid of these demons in your body. And right when you're in it, you're like, oh my gosh, like two thoughts. In one hand, you're going, oh my gosh, I'm so glad that I can get rid of this and finally be free of this. But deep down, knowing you're not. And then on the other hand, like, that just crushes you because, you know, it's like deep down your identity, you know? And I didn't realize this was happening at the time until years later, processing through it in therapy. I just kind of did it. And it was a whole like long story to go into. But I was in that spot where I was like, I gotta get rid of this. You know, I gotta do everything I can to get rid of this. And, you know, went to all the measures that I could. But after that, nothing happened. You know, it happened, or, you know, so I thought and tried to believe, but it kept coming up. And this was around the same time that COVID happened. So, you know, everything was shutting down. And for me, that was like a lot of queer people, like our queer awakening, where I had time to sit with my thoughts. I had time to let it, you know, kind of sink in. And I was just like, this isn't going anywhere. So I guess the only thing to do is to try to process through this. And so that's what I did. And I, you know, came out to a few close people and found a therapist and just dove into it. But I remember like even writing on like my therapy papers, like I think I'm gay, or like even just writing the word gay was like so hard for me to do because it was so hard to like acknowledge like, oh, this is my reality. So kind of started that process, and it was a good stepping stone. It wasn't the greatest in the fact that like it was still in this middle ground between BYU, church, and trying to embrace, like, that it didn't mesh. My first therapist is a gay man married to a woman, and so in a mixed orientation marriage. You know, which fortunately that was not anything crazy like my conversion therapy experience was, but it definitely like made it so people could be like, well, why can't you make that work? You know, this person makes it work. Why can't you make it work? Yeah. Or I got so much at BYU. Well, David Archuleta's gay and in the church, so why can't you?
Dang it.
You know,
you were a couple years too early.
I know. I'm like, just too early. You know, random people telling me that. I remember even like going to shop for homes, finding an apartment, and one of the landlords being like, oh, I don't know. Like, you can't have any, we don't accept that here. And I was like,
wow.
First thing of discrimination that I like experienced. And I was like, what?
Like, who said anything about that?
I know.
Like, why is that what you're thinking about right now?
Literally.
You should be looking at money.
Literally.
No, seriously. And this is when they first meet you.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. And so, I mean, because I had asked, like, are you an LDS standard house?
Oh, right.
Like,
yeah.
You know, at the time, I think I was.
A couple years too late.
Yeah,
for that too,
I know. I'm like, I think I was dating somebody. And I was like, well, I have a boyfriend. Is that an issue? Which I shouldn't even have to ask in the first place, right?
Right.
Being where we were, and yeah, I was hit with kind of the like, oh, well, yeah, he would have to sleep in the couch downstairs. And I was like, oh, not the stranger police.
No, right. Wait, what?
And brings up the David Archuleta's gay. So definitely had a lot of that middle gray area. I think that is, I had like, I see my BYU experience in like three parts, right? Like my ballroom dance part, which just loved. I had great experiences there traveling with my team, lots of which were queer people, you know, and we're all kind of in this together. And then I also had the part where I was playing this like straight person, cis person. And then this part where I was in this gray area where it started to come to life. And as soon as I came out and as soon as COVID happened, I realized very quickly, I can't be here too much longer. Like this is mentally going to really wreck me because I started to realize, oh, I'm not a terrible person. I'm not a sinner. You know, I started to like find myself a little bit. So I finished BYU in 3 years. Wow. After that, I was just like, I got to be done. So I took like 20 credit semesters, did spring, summer, fall, winter, and just you know, got out of there, which it was a dark time. It was,
I'm sure,
it, as soon as I realized that, it was just the darkest time ever. And I, it was such a blur because I was also living with my parents and I was you know, dealing with all of these things, and then by the end secretly dating guys. So it was a lot. So there's like a five part answer to your simple question.
That's what we wanted to
know. And happy to get into any of those details, like any of those specific avenues of it. But yeah, it was a crazy ride.
And I'm curious, as you began to, at that time, you know, identify as gay and whatnot, did you find community amongst the queer community at BYU? Just because I know that they have a really strong community there, a lot of support, and I've seen people find a lot of support there. And so I'm curious if that was the same for your experience, and was it helpful or was it hard just because you were in such a low place that it was like, I can't even get there. I need to get the hell out of here. You know what I mean? Because and both are valid. So
I didn't, because I think I was trying to protect myself. I didn't really let myself. I was very much playing the like closeted gay. So I was realizing it, but I was dating guys, but I was like still appearing not. And it's interesting because this was like simultaneously right with that class, the diversion, equity, and belonging class that I was in, like realizing a lot of things, like realizing, you know, I don't want to show up today and be gay me. I can't, like, I couldn't physically get there. So I didn't seek out any of it. I think I had, like, we had, I had gay people in my major and in ballroom, and we kind of like, hey, I see, like, we knew it's like an unspoken thing, but we never talked about it. And I wish I would have. Now I'm like, oh, that would have helped me like process through so many things. My boyfriends at the time were really helpful in it. And they, you know, one of them went to BYU, the other one did too. And that was the other aspect, is I was too scared to be kicked out. So I didn't want to, I was like, I just don't want to. This was also when they were kind of changing the honor code of like, you can date. Oh, now you can't, and this and that. And you know, it was interesting because that was like the first moment where, and I mean, sad to say this, but growing up in Provo, like that was the first moment where I realized like my privilege, because I had the privilege to not be passing or to not be visible, to kind of have this straight passing of like, oh my God, like I get to just kind of like hide away under my rock, even though I am, you know, identifying as gay at the time, like. And it was during Black Lives Matter. And I just remember like looking at like the Black students at BYU. I'm really good friends with Taylor. So we're both there. And I remember seeing her and talking with her about it and her experiences being so visible and not having that like choice and just being like, wow, I am so privileged in this way. Like, so a lot of like, a lot of things, but I still stayed under the radar. I think I just mentally and physically didn't have the capabilities to do it. And the safety either, 100%. Living at home, you know?
Yeah, and BYU is scary. And I've always said this too, like, and I've talked to Nate, everybody in Black Ministries, we've had conversations, like, at the end, why, for us, on our platform, advocating for the queer community at BYU and their experiences and just uplifting their voices was always so important to us, because although us as Black students, we experienced a lot of things, we did not have policies actively at the time, written to discriminate against us, mm-hmm. make us feel less than. Yeah, action-wise, 100%. You know,
we
had a different. We recognized our privilege in that way. Yeah. Even then, right? Like, our schooling is not put into question because of who we are and how we should be able to live our life, right? That's why it was always such an important piece of our message, was that we felt, we felt like in community with the queer community at BYU and seeing their struggles and being like, we want to amplify their stories and what they're experiencing, because we felt it was just so unjust. Yeah. Because at the end of the day, like, you know, there's a ton of Black people at BYU who just, you know, they assimilate to whiteness and do their own thing. And at the end of the day, we're like, our queer brothers and sisters here don't have that option.
Yeah.
Like, they don't have that when they, you know, they should be able to kiss whoever the hell they want to, hold whoever's hand, like, do what normal 20-year-olds do, you know, and not feel like they're going to get kicked out of school because of that.
Right.
Totally.
You should. Just the idea that there are certain things that you can do that are just regular human behavior that could cost you education.
Right.
It's just regular things that people do. Like, if you want to go party, or if you want to go have sex with somebody, or if you want to, like...
Well, even just experience love life for the first time.
Love life.
Exactly.
That was a big one for me. Sorry, not to cut you
off. No, you're good, yeah.
Like, I remember going on my very first date, and I remember, like, stark difference, right? I played into this, like, straight facade. Like, first date... I was like, holy shit, I'm in a rom-com movie right now.
Oh my gosh.
I'm feeling all these things. And I remember feeling so happy. And I remember being so, like, so romantic, so cute, kissing under the lights and going and seeing Christmas lights, like, just so giddy, right? And I remember being like, there's no way this is bad. And going and being so excited to tell people and just being left with, like, oh, you know, like, so much, like, weirdness around it. And I was like, I finally get it. I get, like, what dating's about. I get why people like this.
Yeah, you
like,
see what you, yeah. Now you understand why people are doing, are kissing in all these strange areas.
Yes, totally. And on, like, the Black Menaces note, like, I think that was a little after I had left, but I remember being like, oh, I would have, like, killed to have this while I was there, because I remember seeing every video. I was just like, oh, like, you help people feel so seen there, and that goes so long, so far, even for the people like me who are closeted and watching from, you know, under the view. So it's great.
Makes sense. So you know, during that time that you were working to graduate from BYU and everything like that, what was it that I guess made you decide to stay in Utah? Like, I know you have family here, and, like, this is, you know, kind of, like, major connections, but, like, what was it that made you decide to stay here and, like, pursue a career and, like, pursue drag here in Utah?
I didn't choose it. Okay. it chose me, unfortunately, but I'm glad it did. Honestly, it came down to, like, money.
Oh, right.
Big thing. I
love capitalism.
That's a slew.
Yeah.
That's the opposite of a slew.
Yeah, slew.
I was trying to go to New York. I was actively looking. Part of my program was to do internship. I was looking. I still want to go to New York, but I realized that I'll go when it's meant to be at that point. And I decided to stay at BYU because I was, religious credits, right? I'm basically stuck there, cheap tuition. Right. I had scholarship money that was applying for the next year, like, all the things. And I was like, no point in transferring. I was in the major that is the only major that experience design. It's offered in the whole nation. So lots of things. And I was just like, let's just buckle up, buttercup. And then I was like, you know what? If I'm going to be in Utah, then I might as well go to Salt Lake. My sister had just moved up here. She was kind of deconstructing the church, leaving. And she's like, you would love it up here. It's way different. And things just kind of aligned. I ended up finding, like, a job, pretty, like, internship that turned into a job really quick in Lehigh. They moved me up to Salt Lake City. And that, the job that I was at, like, that played a huge role in kind of getting to the point that I'm at now because of the people I met there.
Okay.
Yeah. I feel like, well, I don't know if you had a set follow-up or not. I can go into it.
I actually did. There was one question that I forgot, and it might not, it may kind of mesh, but I wanted to ask, when you came out as gay 3 years ago, did that feel complete to you at the time? Or did you feel like there was more to it? Or did you feel like this is who I am? Like, I finally realized.
Interesting. I don't know if I've actually thought about this as much. Yeah, I like that question, though.
Yeah, that's a really good question.
It's a great one. Come on, Nate. Come on. philosophical questions.
I'm blushing. Stop.
I feel like none of it felt complete because I didn't accept myself in completeness. But it did get to the point where I did feel like, wow, I remember being in like my gay relationships and being like, oh yeah, this is my life calling is to be this like twink, which is like a feminine gay person, like just like this feminine gay guy, you know, like that was like, oh yeah, this is who I'm supposed to be. And I'm going to have this family. And I planned out my whole life on, you know, I'm such a visual person, Pinterest. I had my whole Mormon wedding on this Pinterest board. As soon as that was gone, I was like, I'll be single in the church. And then I was like, oh, I'll have this gay relationship and had this whole life planned out. And I think I committed to that. And things just kept coming up as I processed through it, right? As I was in therapy more and processing, I was like, oh, but it didn't, I don't think it connected until I found drag down the road, that my trans identity. So I think I was kind of in this like gay identity, and then drag came along, and that's I think what really like opened up a new layer to me. So
I'm sure the drag, like I'm sure the drag community has got to be fascinating anywhere.
Yes,
but especially in Salt Lake City,
it's super, super
Utah in general. Like
yes,
it's very. Yeah, you can talk more about it, but I just, I really hadn't been exposed to drag until I came here. And so it's interesting that this was my, you know, you would think like my first experiences would be in Utah. That's when I see my first drag show is in Utah. You know what I mean? Like people wouldn't expect that, wouldn't think that, wouldn't think that those experiences would be here. And so, yeah, and kind of, going along with that, I'm curious, like, is the people that you met at your job, you said that they were so integral to you being where you are today, right? And so are they the ones who, you know, the people that you met there, were they people who ended up becoming friends? Were they a part of the community, the queer community themselves? Did they introduce you to drag? Like, I'm just curious how they brought you and kind of bringing us up to what, how you got introduced to drag and that, that experience.
They, so my, a lot of my company that I, you know, came into, it's women, gays, and we all, like, it's the hospitality industry, so a lot of gays, it was, if there was any guys in the company on the level that I was at, they were all gay. And so I came in, and a lot of them, you know, there was one specific couple, I call them, like, my gay dads. Gibson Andrew, shout out to you if you're watching this. They both worked at the company, and I remember kind of coming in and being at BYU, and Gibson, my, he was my boss at the time, and he just embraced me open arms. Like he was going to go on a mission. Like he kind of went down a similar path. And I remember it clicked a lot of things, seeing him and seeing the other gay people and women who had successful careers in that workplace and were themselves, was like, wait, what? Because I was taught my whole life, these are like demonized people. They are sinners. They're bad. They don't, they're not happy. And I remember going and seeing
heavy
all these
on the not happy.
Happy people. And I'm like, wait, hold up, you know, and even like with people drinking, like, oh, there are successful people who are doing this. And that like, just like immediately was like clicking. So I think the more I opened my community, the more things started to make sense.
It's crazy how that works,
huh? Isn't it?
Opening
your
mind and stuff like that will make you not hate people.
And it definitely like was the leading factor that opened up my eyes a little bit. I remember I was breaking up with my boyfriend, one of them, before I was moving up to Salt Lake, and he had just suggested, he was like, hey, he's like, you should check out like this drag YouTube channel. Like, I think you would like it. Like, I think you would like drag. Like, you seem like you would like it. And I remember being like, yeah, sure. Like, whatever.
Okay.
Thank you.
Not during the breakup?
Yeah, let's break up. No.
Right.
Yeah. And I watched a few and I'm like, funny, whatever. But I think that kind of started to plant a seed. And then moved to the Salt Lake community, our member base where we are, like, just met so many people again, queer people. Once again, visibility was huge. Seeing these visible queer people in these spaces, huge. And one night, one of some colleagues invited me to a drag queen show. And I was kind of like, I don't know, not really. But I was like, sure. And at this time, I was still kind of like, out of the church, but like, you know, still like family.
We know the room. We know,
you know, we all, we're not deconstructing.
Not deconstructed,
and, and I remember going to this drag queen show, and I, like, just the most special night of my life. it makes me like emotional because it just like opened this whole world around me to like freedom, liberation, community, love, like joy, so many things. And I had no idea it existed, right? Especially in Salt Lake City. And it was just, I just literally stood there. I was actually watching the videos from that night, the other night, and I had like makeup on for the first time. I think I had like this pearl necklace. Like first, like I was like, oh, it's just like a little feminine. And it just like opened up something inside of me. And I was like, oh my goodness, I want to do this. Like I'm meant to do this. And that sounds cheesy, but it really felt like that. And then ran into somebody in drag who I went to high school with. And she is now my drag mom. And we connected and she was in drag and she was like, wait, what, you are here? Because she knew how Mormon I was. She's like, are you doing here? And I was like, we kind of connected, and that kind of like opened a little bit of like a door to this drag community in Salt Lake City, which is like the most amazing community ever as far as like talent and like tight-knit closeness, love, like super super special. And I think we all bond on the trauma of growing up the ways that we did. And that was like a big part too. I remember processing through a lot of trauma with them where they got it and they went through like conversion therapy. I remember like talking and it was crazy because they were like, yeah, I went through something similar. And I remember being like, whoa, I cannot believe other people have gone through this. And so that immediately like just brought us together where we're like, what? Okay, you get me and I get you on a level that nobody else has gotten each other. So it was cool. And it took me a second to get there. I had my whole drag persona built out and eventually was like, all right, let's, I was so scared of what people thought. And I was just like, let's just pull the trigger and let's do it. So on Halloween, I started drag and it was just upward and onward from there.
What a great night to start drag.
That's when most drag queens start drag. Cause it's like, it's not like too taboo to dress up as like a girl. Okay. I dress up as Regina George, right? I was like, I'm just Regina George.
If you could also, because just for our listeners one more time.
Yes.
If you could just explain what drag is.
Yes.
And how it works. So drag for beginners in like 60 seconds.
Thank you. And by the way, I can talk. So interject with the question.
Oh, no, we love it. You're a great storyteller. I'm loving it. Yeah.
Drag is an art form. At its core, it is an art form. It is usually known to be like an art form where cis male people impersonate female characters. Like that's kind of where I don't even want to say that's where it started from. Historically, it's just an art form of gender bending and gender expression where people express themselves in a gender that may not identify with their own, or it may identify with their own, or it might be not in the gender binary at all. It's to express oneself in that way. And it's very, I like to say this for like people who don't know drag. Drag is anything you want it to be. It is comedy, it is fashion, it is dancing, it is acting, singing. It's performing art at the core of it. And so you can take any lens that you want with that. Big time drag queens are on Fashion Week, or they're in Marvel movies right now, or they're having their own comedy tours. So it's a pretty big, just like performing art form through gender bending and expression.
Okay.
I don't know if that's answers that. But I started dressed up as Regina George, found my drag persona, and that is when I kind of was like, okay, this is what I'm supposed to do. Another layer I had unpeeled of like, okay, I'm this gay man and this drag queen. That's my feminine side that I was missing. And I really leaned into that and I started to pick up my drag, fell in love with it, and it got to this point. I remember there was one night where I was probably like a few months in and I was like doing like a little like natural makeup look, a natural glam look. And I remember doing it and I looked at myself and I was like, oh my God, I look like my sister right now. And it frightened me so much, but it also made me feel like it clicked something. And then I felt for the first time dysphoria because I didn't look like that's the version of her that I wanted to. And I saw my like manly features and, you know, all these things. And that's when I like started to click. And again, I just kept pushing it down. Like, I can't have this be the case. I saw trans individuals in the drag community. I saw people who were out as trans in the media, and it was not an easy or pretty thing to be. And so I was like, no, hell no. Like, I can't do this. I just came out as gay. My family kind of is just barely kind of caught up a little bit. Like, this cannot be a new thing for me. And as I guess it didn't learn with coming out as gay, it just kept coming back. It didn't leave. And I remember one of my bosses at the time, she started to pick up on things and talk about allies. She sat down one night and she was like, hey, by the way, like, if you ever want to wear feminine clothes, like out of drag here to work, like, you like do it. I hope you know this is a safe space. She's like, obviously follow the dress code, but like, don't come in your like stiletto heels and bloody outfit.
Don't come in full drag too much.
You know? Right.
But she's like, feel free to show up. And that, I mean, opened doors. And so I started to, you know, dressing different at work and wearing soft makeup at work and all these things. And
that's really cool, actually. Shout out to that boss.
Yeah,
shout out to your boss. Shout out, girl.
She was great. And she actually later down the road, because at that point then I had come out as gender fluid. You know, a lot of trans and queer people will come out lots of times for a lot of, I guess, people who don't know. So, you know,
it's a layer thing.
So like even before I came out as gay, I was like, oh, I'm bi, right? You're too scared to admit this. So you are like, how can I do it in the least like impactful way? Not for everybody, but for some people. So it was like, I came out as gender fluid and I was like, okay, I'm going to just have he, she, they pronouns, still go by my name and wear whatever I want. And that's that. And I remember even writing in my journal, I was like, yeah, I'm pretty sure I'm trans, but I'm just going to say I'm gender fluid because I don't want to deal with that shit. Like, and then it kept coming up. And same boss, actually, we were sitting down and she was like, so I noticed you're gender fluid. This was months later and dressing different. I love that. And she's like, I feel like you lean a little more one way. Do you feel like you identify more one way than the other? She's like, no pressure. I'm just curious. And I just like broke down crying to her. And I just was like, yeah, I'm trans. Like, and that was like the first time I had like said it. And I was like, wow. And from there, it was felt like I was like back at BYU, me coming out as gay, but like 10 times scarier because I didn't know the outcome of this. And I didn't know any really trans people on a deep level. It's just not, we're not as represented. And I was just like, I don't know what to do. And so got back into therapy, found a cradle therapist. Shout out to therapy. And started processing through it, finding my trans identity. And drag really helped me get there. It helped, and it helps me get there daily to embrace myself. There's a saying by RuPaul that drag doesn't change who you are. It reveals who you are, whatever degree that is. And, you know, it really helped reveal this version. My name, Ms. Meredith, the drag, the stage name, I thought about keeping it, not ended up keeping it. So I go by Meredith out of drag and kind of just have landed up here.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah.
And do you feel like doing drag just helped you to accept that feminine side more because you were expressing it more often? Or what else about doing drag made you feel like really accept like this part of you?
Yeah, definitely that. Like, drag is for me hyper femininity. My drag persona is like the pink princess is my like drag like tagline, whatever. And so for me, as soon as I got that, I just soaked it up. Like the femininity, it just immediately, I was just like, oh my goodness, this is what I've been craving my whole life, and just filled my soul. And I remember I went on a trip to this drag convention with a bunch of my girlfriends and drag queens in Salt Lake City. And I was in drag the whole time, like even outside of the convention. Usually with drag, queens will go on the stage in their makeup, they leave and they take it off immediately. And I was in it like the whole trip because I was just like, I don't want to leave this version of myself. Like, I feel so happy as this version of myself. And like, I want to show up as this version. And it's obviously a more like dramatized makeup. Like I don't wear that day to day, but right. Like
can't do full glam every day.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. The skincare will not right. be skincare. No, it will not. So yeah, it definitely was the hyper femininity of it that just like really helped me come to realize that. And then I think it clicked as I started to lean into my trans identity, as I started hormones and all of that.
Okay. Hey, yeah. So as you, and this can be kind of like one of our last questions before we go to recommendations. But you mentioned that trans people are not as represented right now, yes. right? So as you're on the podcast, as you're representing trans people in the state of Utah and throughout the entire world, right? What's some advice you would give to someone who maybe is still peeling back those layers, or someone who is looking for some guidance on like how to move forward? What advice yeah. would you give to them?
Oh, I would say just be so patient and loving with yourself, and don't put pressure on yourself to fit whatever mold, right? I think as soon as I realized my trans identity, I thought I have to do all these things. And you trans is a very, but it's a very fluid thing. It's not this black and white thing. Especially now, there's an umbrella of trans, and you get, you know, the non-binary side, you get the gender fluid side, you get trans women who want to pass as cis, you know, you kind of get this whole side. And I would just say, you don't have to fit in any mold. You don't have to, you know, you can create your own trans identity that works for you. And I think I wish someone could have told me that at the beginning of realizing this, like, it's okay to be you. Do, if you want to do certain things, if you don't, embrace, bless you. Embrace the things that you want to. And then I would also say, find community, find people who then fit with that version of you. Because especially like trans individuals, and if anybody in Utah needs connections to trans individuals, let me know, because that we are few, but we are strong and we're growing here. And I mean, my DMs are always open. I have so many people in my DMs who are in their journeys of transness, and I'm still in the beginning of it, you know, so I'm looking up to people who have been transitioning for a while. So I would just say, find your community and find your people and be you, because you're the only you in this world.
Amen.
Yeah.
And one more question I wanted to ask, just because I know we didn't get hit on your family too much, but if giving like advice based on the things your family did well, and the things your family maybe didn't do as well through this journey, right?
Great
through
question.
You identifying as gay at the time, right? And then through you finding drag, and then eventually now identifying as trans. What advice would you give family members, particularly in Utah, in the LDS context, right? Because that's your experience.
Yes.
What advice would you give those family members if they have, you know, someone in their life they love who is, you know, identifying as queer or trans? Like, what would you tell them, how they can really show up to support that person?
I would say, I mean, as cliche as it is, first and foremost, like, just love. That's the first thing, right? Like, love. And then be willing to show up and listen and be open to it, right? I think it all comes back to this. And I'm kind of in the middle of this a little bit right now, where, I mean, I came out to my family officially like a month ago.
Wow.
And so I'm like, I'm still kind of in the midst of it, still getting, you know, backlash on some end and support on the other end. So to the families, I would just say, this is the same person that you know and love your whole life, right? There are changes, and there are changes of people. Like, I'm asking my family to use different name and pronouns, and that's new. And I realized that there are changes, but I, at my core, I'm still me. I'm still the same me who loves to do hair and makeup and dance. I still love rom-com movies. I still am passionate about food and traveling and being an activist. Like, I still have the same interests. And I think sometimes families, especially when it comes to like the gender identity side,
100%.
You think, oh my gosh, my child is dead. I have lost, you know, and I get that there is some grieving. Obviously there's a grieving process, but at the same time, this is still your same child. yesterday before you knew this news to now today, and to just be patient with that, and also to know that your child probably doesn't know all the answers and they're figuring it out. So like walking with them is going to have so much more.
I love that.
Than not, like, you know, and they're not going to understand everything. So being, I would say, sorry, I'm saying a full part answer, but I would say one more thing of like, not being like scared to walk into the unknown with them.
Yeah.
I've had to walk into this with by myself and figure out a lot. And I think there's a humility with parents, especially. You want to be there for your child. You want to know the answers for your child. So having that humility to be like, I'm not going to know the answers, but let's walk this together. You know, let's go and let's figure it out together. You know, I think that will go so far and have such a greater impact than being like, well, I don't know the answers, so I'm just going to shove whatever answers I think I should onto you. Or this is what I heard from X and Y media outlet or from this religion. Like, there's so many voices about trans identities right now. Mm. Your child is going to be your best source for how you navigate it. You know,
that's a word right there.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
a bar. I like that.
No, I love it. That's why I had to ask, because I just feel like that's such a big piece as well.
Huge
as your
piece.
Journey that anybody experiences. And I just wanted you to be able to share a little bit about that, because I know that's part of the difficult parts, not just for yourself, right? Accepting you. And, you know, I know what it's like when I'm having a difficult time, and then imagining the people in your life making it even harder. It's like, I cannot.
Yes.
Like,
I'll say one more thing too, like kind of on that vein, on the side that I'm on. Like, I would consider myself, I'm a people pleaser, which serves me and doesn't serve me in a lot of ways. Doesn't really.
Right.
People pleasers, we hear you,
rise
we see
up.
You. But I'm a people pleaser, and so I really like to like try to get people to like me. But I think I've learned patience and having grace and understanding has gone a very long way in this journey, especially coming out as trans. I could have written off so many relationships very quick just because of misunderstanding. And I, not to say that like boundaries are important and I have boundaries that are needed, but like, I think being patient, understanding, I'm starting to see some of that come to fruition with family specifically and some close friends from Provo. Like, there's a lot of just like, they grew up in the environment that I did. I think back to me as a teenager. And so at the end of the day, we all grew up in this way and we're conditioned to think a certain way. And until someone comes and breaks that mold, we don't think proximate to us. We're not thinking different.
100%. Right.
That's why I think proximity is the best thing ever. But with that, if you show a little bit of grace and patience and have a little bit of a leg, it can go so far for relationships, and it can lead to really like deeper relationships and greater understanding and greater love, especially on the family front. Again, not to say that like it's not important to have boundaries and to like, it's not your job to educate, but a lot of people being in this position, like, I'm the only trans person that most people in my life know.
Yeah.
And so if they're going to learn from somewhere, I'd hope it would be from a good source. Yeah. That's me personally, though. I know not everybody feels that way. So
yeah.
No, that makes sense.
That was great.
I think, Rachel, you got anything else?
No, that was it. Well, thank you. I just want to thank you for being so vulnerable with us today and sharing so much. Just because I know it can be, you know, emotional to share some of the things you did. And I just appreciate you bringing us into your journey and into your life, and bringing our listeners into your journey and into your life to hear. And just, I just want to have a big thank you. So
thank you.
Yeah. We loved having you on the podcast, and you were a delight. We appreciate you.
I was so happy to be here. Thank you for having me. This is like fangirl moment, being here, being the BYU student, scrolling through TikToks and seeing y'all. Like, now being here, it is such a huge moment to be sitting. And, you know, thank you guys for all that you do. Seriously.
Oh, thank you. Okay.
Of course, we appreciate you. Recommendations.
Nate, do you want to start this week?
Yes, actually.
Okay.
All right. This one. So, I mean, I recommend a lot of TV shows, a lot of movies.
You do.
But this is kind of coming out of left field. This one caught me by surprise.
Okay.
Amazon Prime with limited ads now.
Stop. Oh, you have unlimited ads.
No, with limited ads. Oh. No, because they switched it now.
Damn.
honestly, I'm not even
going to be mad broke. They're all keep doing that. All these streaming services. What the hell?
Yeah. But see, Amazon is the smartest with it, though, because they got us. They started doing that freebie thing. You know what I'm talking about?
No.
So, okay, I watch Amazon Prime a lot because they have some good TV shows on there. But they started doing this thing called freebie. And it's like, you know how like they have like the streaming service within a streaming service where it's like
Amazon Prime. It's like a bundle.
Like, yeah.
Oh, yes. Like everybody.
Yeah.
Or but it'd be like, oh, well, you can watch this movie. It's on this streaming service, but it's available on HBO.
Yeah.
So it was like that. So they had freebie where it's like you could watch these free movies, but with ads. So I was like, okay, cool. That's part of Amazon. And then next thing I know, they just like mix them together. I'm like, oh, they got me on that one. Anyway, this is Korean drama that they came out with called Marry My Husband.
Ooh.
And it starts off swinging right from episode one. But it's this woman who has terminal cancer and she is murdered by her husband and her best friend who are having an affair. Right. So she gets murdered in the very first episode. But there's a twist. She wakes up in her body 10 years earlier. So then she like takes revenge. Right. So I read the exactly right. So you gotta go check this out.
What? So the way I am you right now.
Right. Okay.
And not only that, but like you know how stuff be having short episodes now.
Uh-huh.
You
don't have like
yeah, 16 episodes. And they're all like an hour.
That's
long.
Good though. 16's good.
Hell yeah.
Nowadays they wrap it up in 8.
Exactly. So yeah, we about to get into this.
No, yeah.
Oh, it's great. So I started it when? What's today? Thursday? I started on Tuesday.
Thursday.
Sorry, Monday or Tuesday, it doesn't matter. Anyway, yeah. I started it like earlier this week. I'm on episode, I think, 6 or 7.
Okay.
And I'm loving it so far.
Slay.
So love. That's my recommendation. Check it out. It's a K-drama on Amazon Prime. If you have like Amazon Prime shipping, you also have Amazon Prime Video. So you can watch it for free.
Right.
All right. Love that.
So go check that out. It's called Marry My Husband.
Okay.
That's my recommendation for this week.
I'm ready for my recommendation.
What you got?
I don't know if I've done this before, and if I have, too bad. My recommendation for the week is I think everyone just needs to be honest with themselves and admit that you like reality TV. And so,
Love is Blind again.
Listen. Oh, no, here's the thing. And the recommendation isn't even one specific show because there's so many different types of reality TV show. You got Housewives, you got Too Hot to Handle, you got Love Island, you got The Love is Blind. There's actually a new show
going crazy.
There's actually a new show on Peacock called Thruple. I don't know if you guys watched
that trailer.
Oh my gosh.
With the moms?
No, this is about couples who are trying to be a thruple for the first time, and they're bringing. And it's really cool because actually, it's like a lot of like queer couples and people who you know are gender fluid and things like that. And so it's really cool to see like just as I have no experience with exposure to people who are in thruples or anything like that, because I'm in Utah, and so I don't have anybody that I know in my life that's really a part of these relationships. So it's just been interesting. Anyway, I say all this to say, I love watching reality TV. Just because I feel like it really teaches you about people. It's like low-key sociology and psychology, and it's watching the way people interact. And I always learn a ton about...
But it's staged, though.
Not all of it. Okay, some of it is.
Okay.
But some of it isn't.
Come on, psychology,
Thank
Rachel.
You. And it's not my degree. But no, seriously. And I mean, especially like dating shows. Like a lot of the time dating shows aren't staged, and the emotional moments are real. Like
that makes
even if the producers... manipulated, their reactions are typically more real. They manipulated them to react that way. But it does teach you like about people, how to communicate, how to have conversations. So that's personally why I like to watch it. And I especially like to watch it, you know, after I've gardened, because it really, that's when I feel like I learned the most and I have the most takeaways. So that's my recommendation for the week.
Come on, come on, garden reality TV.
Saying, it really, that
she
is
says,
like
I'm
my
balanced,
preferred.
It's but I do got my reality tech.
Yes, because it really, like, I feel like I learned so much. And, like, I feel like I've really taken the story even more. And I understand, like, I pick up on everything that I wouldn't have otherwise.
Love.
See, I love, like, I think I've told you this before, how, like, I don't watch reality TV shows. Not because I hate reality TV, because if I stop, I'm not going to be able to stop. If I start, I'm not going to be able
but
to stop.
But the thing is, Nate, it's okay because there's so many shows to watch.
Well, that's the problem. There's so
like
many
Love
shows
Island.
To watch.
There's
I have
so
too many
much
things
Love
to
Island.
Do. I can't watch.
I'm gonna change you on this.
Yes.
Okay, and I'm gonna go to Matt. Can I get a recommendation?
Yes. It's your turn. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm gonna change you on this, and I'm gonna give you a recommendation if you haven't already on this reality TV train. This is my like pageant answer. Okay. pageant answer. RuPaul's Drag Race. Mm. It is reality TV. It is drag. It is queer art. Mm. But it gets spicy. Mm. It gets spicy. I don't think RuPaul's is as drag as like staged as people like as some of the dating shows.
100%.
And so it definitely is interesting. But
and I do love shows like that, like competition. Yeah.
Competitions.
And I actually watched the competition show that RuPaul was a judge on. It's called Skin Wars. It was like a body painting.
Wow, really I haven't fun. Even. Yeah. I heard about that.
Yeah, it was cool. Wow. So he did like super realistic body paint. He was
I love.
Anyway.
That's cool.
Yes. That is one that I would watch. I just, you know.
If yeah, RuPaul's Drag Race. Okay. For those who don't know, it is like America's Next Top Model for drag queens is how I explain it.
Yes.
When people ask me what it is.
Because America's Next Top Model had a chokehold on all of us. Even though, looking back, problematic as hell. But yes, it had us in a chokehold.
Yes.
Cool. Any other recommendations?
I mean, I've got all the good recommendations. If you are in Salt Lake City, is it just shows or is it anything?
It can be literally anything. And a lot of our listeners are Utah-based.
Okay, so. If you are in Utah, Salt Lake City, you need to try the breakfast sandwich from Central 9th. It will change your life. And I will overhype it because sandwich. It's so good.
Okay, let me. Okay.
It's on focaccia bread. Listen, it doesn't sound crazy, but it goes hard.
Okay.
So breakfast sandwich from Central 9th.
Okay.
It's great.
Okay. I love a food recommendation. Yes. I'm going to go.
And they do it all the time. It's not just in the morning.
Okay. So is it just, okay. So, the Central 9th, breakfast sando, I see it.
Yeah. Central 9th is like a marketplace that they do.
Right, I did. I wanted to know where it was located.
She said we're going after.
I don't know why I thought you were writing it down. Like,
no, I went to the Google location.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Recommend.
Okay. So breakfast sandwich on Central 9th. Cool. Anything else?
One more.
Yeah, go ahead.
What you got?
If you love makeup beauty products, the e.l.f. Lip Plumper Chapstick, gorgeous. It will change your life for everyone. Everyone I've recommended to raves about it. So
okay.
There you go.
And e.l.f. is just goated. I love e.l.f. so much. Like they are good at making dupes that really actually work. And they're an OG in the makeup game. So I always recommend e.l.f. I'll always support them no matter what.
Yes, same.
Okay. And don't forget to plug yourself.
Oh, yes. My name is Miss Meredith. You can find me on all socials at It's Ms. Meredith. That is Ms. with an MS because she's an independent woman.
Yeah.
Wink. That's my little gig. I say it at shows. I around the city, you can find me. I host a weekly bingo night at the Drift Lounge. And it's a very fun time.
It is a good time.
They've both been.
We should all post up like one day at the same time. Yeah. Like we should be like Black Menace, like we're invited all our followers all come the same day.
Black it's Mace the same nice. Place. Utah Black Chamber did an event there. Like a few weeks ago, I believe, at Drift Lounge. Cool. Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, so it's a fun time. I'm there. And then on the weekends, you can find me performing around Salt Lake City, Park City, wherever. I'm always posting on my Instagram and TikTok my schedule. So
yeah,
that's me.
You heard it here first, y'all. Follow her on Instagram, Twitter, YouTubes, wherever else.
Yes.
Cool. And do the same for us.
Yeah.
I'm not going to read all that stuff. The Black Menaces at YouTube, Twitter, Instagram. Not Facebook, TikTok.
No,
that's the one.
We're not on Facebook.
Not Facebook.
We're not getting with that generation.
They will really have beef. Black Menaces and Pals. All right. Feel free to grab some merch off of the blackmenaces.org/store. Donate to us at the Black Menaces on Venmo. Support the movement. And with that, I think that's it. Right. We'll catch y'all next week.
Yes.
Woo, bye.
You.
Thank you.